ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Joe Avea, founder of Cineplace, a platform that connects cinemas and content creators, providing both with the tools to ensure that every event displayed at the cinema has the very best chance of success. He's also the founder of CineVents, an event cinema distributor on a mission to provide fresh approach to distribution through the analysis of market data and trends. Joe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, good to be here.
Let's begin with a little bit of background on your career. Can you give us the view from 50,000 feet of how you came to found CineVents and CinePlace?
Yeah, so I began life as a radio presenter, actually, but I tended to spend most of my time doing the graveyard shift, so the kind of 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. shows, which was fun for a while, but I think as the older you get...
it wears on you, I'm sure.
Yeah, it does a bit. It does. I had a few avid fans out there, but not as many as I'd have liked. And then I moved into media, so I worked for a UK broadcaster, ITV, and then moved into publishing. So I worked on magazines like Empire, the film magazine, Q and Mojo, big music titles. And from there, I moved into cinema, largely through the connection of Empire magazine. I ran a cinema sales house called Digital Cinema Media.
When you say cinema sales house, are you talking about placing advertisements in the cinemas, or are you talking about selling the film, like distribution of films to cinemas?
No, this was advertising. So we were owned by Cineworld and Odeon.
Okay.
And we also represented View. So we represented about 85% of the market. And it was a really good introduction into the world of cinema. The owners of those companies sat on our board. And we developed a very good understanding of what made them tick and of what was sort of working in cinema and what wasn't. And while there, I actually sort of oversaw the transformation from analog into digital. And from an advertising point of view, that was quite revolutionary.
Right.
It was a really interesting time to be involved. And while I was there, it seemed to me that there was a real opportunity that wasn't being grasped, particularly by the industry. And particularly by a digital industry, and that was event cinema. During my time there, it grew from representing less than 1% of the market to being over 3.5%. And it was very clear that while occupancy in the cinema was around an average of 18 to 19% at any given time, with the events that were being put on, that could go to 60, 70%. And people were also paying a higher ticket price. And it struck me that with a bit of organization, events in the market really become something that didn't just grow itself, but would also help sustain cinema generally. And that's when I took the leap from DCM and moved into CineVents and set up the company.
Great. So both of your companies, CineVents and CinePlace, complement each other. What is the relationship between the two?
So initially, the idea actually was to create CinePlace. And CinePlace is essentially a marketplace for event cinema. It struck me that 2 or 3 years ago, while event cinema was growing, and in some European countries particularly, it was growing much faster than others, it was a very disjointed industry. And for something that is pretty small, consolidation is kind of essential in order to help it grow. So the idea of the website is simply to introduce content owners to cinemas, because I think there's lots of content owners out there who have fantastic content that merits a showing on the big screen, but there's a lack of understanding about the value of cinema and the opportunity cinema presents, especially digital cinema. And there's also a lot of cinemas out there that don't have the resource to go out and search for content, but who require more control over the supply. You know, most of their supply is from Hollywood. And as we saw this summer in the UK, or actually across Europe, when the supply dries up, i.e. there aren't many family movies, you know, cinemas don't really have many other options to them. In cinema and having access to a wealth of unique and different content can make a big difference to their box office.
Right. You mentioning especially digital cinemas, how is it, is that just simply the transition to digital, or is there something different that you're meaning by that?
Well, I think historically, you know, when cinema was analog, it was a very specialist medium, actually. And obviously, film was physical, and you had to spend lots of money, and you had to create content specifically, you know, for a cinema release. Whereas nowadays, you know, you can produce content in 4K or in HD, and that can be live or pre-recorded, and at the touch of a button, that can be shown in the cinema. And you know, different types of content can be programmed in different screens, and they can be planned 1 or 2 days out. And it means there can be greater flexibility with live events like sport, you know, whereas historically that would have been really difficult. So it presents a much more flexible opportunity for content owners.
Don't you still need a DCP for them, though, to show? Or is that not the case?
Not with live, no.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And also, obviously, you know, when you were dealing with physical film, that was taking a long time to deliver, but also it would have to stay in the reel for a fixed period of time. Whereas with DCP, you can deliver it within 24 hours on pre-recorded and then take it out as soon as it's been shown, put something in its place. So it's a different landscape than it was 7 or 8 years ago. But I think there is still, and this is, I think naturally there is still an inclination from the industry to think in an analog way. And that's not trying to be detrimental. I think it's completely normal. But
it's how people conceive of it, because that's where they came from. And so there's just a certain amount of, this is how it's in their brain to think about it.
No, 100%. And it's definitely one of those industries where, you know, it's a great industry to be involved in. So people don't tend to move on too much. And I think, you know, one of the things we're trying to do by introducing new types of content is to try and engender a new way of thinking about the potential of cinema. You know, one of the things that made me set the business up is realizing that there is a cinema in every single town in the UK. And it is the majority of them are warm, clean, comfortable, safe places to be in. They
have a good place to hide from the weather.
Exactly. They have the majority. They have a big screen. They have brilliant audio. And if you couple that with the fact that we're increasingly becoming a population that likes experiences opposed to a population that likes stuff, the cinema in your local area is an affordable, accessible way to sort of share your passion for a certain type of content with other like-minded people.
Right. Well, there was a study just out of Australia, I think it was in the past month, that spending, young millennials, Gen Z, experience has outstripped consumer goods in terms of spending, which I thought was really interesting and not surprising, but it's always nice to see the data defend what you think.
Exactly. And, you know, I've looked for a few stats like that myself, and it's always pleasing when you...
when you see them, oh, I'm right. Exactly. It's awesome.
Exactly. So, you know, you're not just sort of making it up in your own head. And I think, but it's true. And you know, ultimately, people need more choice. And I think that the challenge we've got with cinema is, you said it earlier on, but I think people have a certain perception of cinema. And if you can educate a community that the cinema is there for more than just Hollywood production, which Event Cinema has done specifically with theatre and opera, or the arts as we'd call it, then, you know, you really are onto something. Another reason for starting the company was when the BBC a couple of years ago ran a Shakespeare week. It was celebrating, I think it was the anniversary of his birth, and they ran a week's worth of content that was free to anyone who had a TV license. And yet hundreds of thousands of people went to the cinema to watch that content and paid for it. And to me, that showed that actually amongst that specific community, they understand that the cinema is a place where you can go and have a great experience without watching a Hollywood film.
Right, that it is actually about every part of the experience. I'm curious because obviously in the States, we have lots of multiplexes and they have suffered as the experience isn't necessarily super fantastic. And so they've been upgrading seats. We see the emergence of Alamo Drafthouse cinemas where they're really crafting a full-blown experience and that's sort of unique with food and silence and, you know, this is how we're going to watch films. And then a renaissance for the art house cinemas. Now, when you talk about every community having their own cinema, are they more independent than the cinemas here in the States?
I think they're getting more independent. We have a really healthy mix, I'd say. There are over 300 indies in the UK, and that's growing. And you've got some really interesting companies like Picture House, Everyman, Light Cinema Group, you know, all of which are focusing on the environment, you know, and not solely relying on the content. And then you've also got, you know, some of the plexes are putting a huge amount of effort into the experience as well, but they're doing it in a slightly different way. So, a plex like View, for example, have got 4K projectors in all of their cinemas. They have invested in putting stadium seating in and, you know, great sound equipment. So, you know, I think they're realizing that they're not going to suddenly become an art house cinema overnight.
No.
But they are going to create an environment that capitalizes on, you know, showcasing, heroing the content, really.
Right. Is there any issue with the risk that calibration won't be right? Like, I know when Solo came out, things were very dark and some theaters just weren't calibrated for it. Now, are you finding that, like, when you have these special events, is it still something where, are you simply brokering the event or are you also ensuring the quality of the event that it's going to come off in a certain way?
To be honest with you, I think you've touched on one of the most interesting points here and probably one of the biggest challenges. And I think that's of consistency. So ultimately, we're a broker, but as a distributor, you know, we are ultimately responsible for that experience that people have. One of the challenges is that we don't have full control over that. So that's not just actually the experience you'd have once you get into the auditorium, which can vary. And it's not just image quality, you know, it can be sound.
Right. Oh, certainly. So, I mean, we make trailers for broadcast entertainment companies. And when we see these trailers in the theater, sometimes we think, oh my gosh, they've got the sound all wrong or the colors are all wrong. It just makes me shudder.
It's tough. It was always a real problem with the advertising as well, actually. Sound was always a big thing. Some theaters would play it incredibly quietly.
Right, you make this glorious 5.1 mix and they completely ruin it.
Exactly. But the bigger point, I think, is that, you know, that consistency of experience. Ultimately, you know, the customer expects a good, you know, something of a good quality. And they don't expect it to be varied. You know, I don't think they tend to view things in terms of, oh, it was like this at View and like this at Cineworld. Like, you know, they don't, it's a cinema to them.
You think? You don't think they have, I mean, I certainly as a consumer, I know this, the film theaters that I won't go to because I know it's going to be rubbish.
I guess. I mean, I think, I don't know. I've always been of the opinion that, well, I think with the growth in art house cinemas, that would encourage people to make a specific choice, you know, about whether you want to go and sit on a sofa or whether you go to a multiplex. I think when it's just a choice of multiplexes, ultimately, you'll go according to what the time of the film is or what film's showing. So, yeah, I agree with you that I think people have a sense of the kind of experience they're going to get at different cinemas. But I think, but one of the challenges as well, to answer your question again, is not just of the experience in the auditorium, but it's also, you know, around the event itself. If you're putting on a sporting event, for example, if you go to a stadium, you know, you get a certain type of experience and service.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, and that's very different to the traditional cinema experience. And I think, you know, you can have one cinema that does a brilliant job and they take over the foyer, they have a sports caster that's pre-recorded that introduces the event and it feels like a real occasion. But on the same night, you might have a cinema that doesn't signpost it, that leaves the lights off in the auditorium, and two people can have a completely different experience. That's not a great recipe for growth. So a big part of our website is designed to actually provide best practice to try and create this sort of sense that there are certain ways of integrate or of working with different types of audiences.
Right, almost like a brand safety element. Like you must do these things to make it work, to build the revenue that you want out of it.
Exactly, and it's not. I appreciate that the majority of cinemas do understand that, but I mean, you know, they're not all in the entertainment business. You know, they are ultimately very good retailers who put on entertaining content.
Yeah, well, so, I sometimes think they're sort of snack dispensaries more than anything else.
Well, it's, you know, I think that's a major part of what they do. And when you look at a genre like theatre, actually the experience isn't vastly different to watching a film in that you arrive, you have a brief introduction, then the lights are down, you stay quiet, you're sort of reverential to the content, and then you leave. Whereas, you know, the different types of content we're trying to introduce, like comedy, like sport, like esports, it's an incredibly different expectation from the audience.
Right.
And not all cinemas understand that, I think.
One of the things I'm curious about is I had read that the business was driven a certain amount by data, specifically the smart data tool, which uses a wide range of marketing and demographic data to cross-reference consumer habits against locations. And I was curious whether GDPR had any impact on your business.
Not really, because we anonymize all of that data. So what we're not doing is telling cinemas exactly where a specific member of the public lives and how to find them. What we're actually doing with that tool is we're giving a very good idea of the number of fans there are of a particular type of content, of where those fans live, and of the type of media those fans tend to engage with. And the idea is that then cinemas can, and distributors, can create a more accurate distribution footprint, and they can potentially start to market to these fans in a slightly more targeted fashion, i.e. use the correct or a more relevant medium to reach fans than they might have been doing in the past.
Right, right. I see. Yeah, I'm curious. So how do you work with esports? That's interesting to me. How does that take me through if you're doing a cinema event with esports? How would that work?
Yes, we've done a couple actually as a distributor. We work directly with the league rather than the publisher. We've worked with the league, the ESL, which is a major esports league. And we worked on a game called CSGO, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, which is the second biggest esports game in terms of viewers. And we worked with them to establish a footprint in cinemas. So we used our data tool actually to find out exactly where the majority of fans lived. And we worked with them to talk to the fans, to educate the fans that there was going to be an event on at the cinema. And we took a live stream, and we actually did this via satellite, but we took a live stream from a grand CSGO final that they were running live in New York, and we broadcast that in the cinema, and it was broadcast live for 6 hours. And it was fascinating how the fans reacted inside the cinema. We pre-recorded an introduction that went ahead of the live feed, and it was the league and a famous player introducing the event and introducing the different cinemas that were watching it. And instantly the fans in the auditorium, rather than sit in their normal seats like most cinema goers do, they got up, they were walking around. I think they made on average 4 trips to the concessions.
Oh, wow.
During the event, mainly to get energy drinks. So, and we worked with a couple of brands to sort of add value. We did competitions. We had a social wall. So that,
well, I would think with all the sort of Twitch, sort of the way people consume content and how they want to share and talk and comment, that's really fascinating.
It was interesting to us because I think, you know, the general concept or the general viewpoint of gaming fans, I think, is that they're largely at home in their pants, you know, what's on. And maybe they are for the majority of time, but a lot of them actually are incredibly social. And some of these live events now, I was in Poland last year for an esports final, and there were 170,000 people there.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a very, very substantial spectator sport. And what we found with cinema is that, you know, often these events take place in quite far-flung venues. And so actually to be able to watch that event at your local cinema in an affordable way and to get something back, we work with brands to sort of provide added value, has proved really popular. I think the challenge, actually, talking about digital cinema, the challenge is, you know, these events run for 6 hours. You need to have a flexible cinema that can see the future opportunity of doing more and more events like this.
Well, also, yeah, I imagine they're also time shifted if you're far flung. But
yes, exactly.
It's not only that it lasts for a long time, but it lasts for a long time that is at odd hours.
Exactly. And I think that's another challenge. So, I mean, you know, it's definitely not without its challenges. But the flip side is, if you get it right, you're introducing an audience who are starting to walk away from cinema back into the movie house. And that's really important.
Right. I'm curious, with the World Cup, are you planning stuff with that? I imagine you must be, right?
Well, interestingly, we're not, largely because of rights issues, actually.
Ah.
So certain cinemas are showing it, but they're unable to charge for tickets. So from a cinema point of view, it's great because obviously they can sell concessions, etc. From our point of view, as much as we'd love to be able to get involved with something like that, it's a very difficult area from a rights point of view. One sport we are looking at quite closely is rugby, and particularly rugby in 4K, which is a completely different viewing experience. And I think that's our view is on all these kind of events, is it needs to be notably different in the cinema than anywhere else to make it viable. And I think with rugby, you've got two opportunities. You've got one, it looks, particularly in 4K, it looks completely different. I finally understood how
it's glorious, right?
it's amazing. And the other side is, you know, you've got lots of dads who have young children who can't go down to the pub to watch the rugby, who might not want to watch the rugby at home because they'll be distracted, but who might want to take their child to a safe environment like the cinema, which is around the corner, to watch it on a big screen, you know, away from a sort of rowdy environment that you get if you went to the local pub. So there is a big opportunity with that, and there is with football. But as I said, football is a bit trickier from a rights point of view.
Right. Well, as soon as you said that, I think, oh, it's probably all sewn up in not even just the World Cup, but everything. I mean,
it's pretty tricky, yeah. And lots of broadcasters sort of have cinema within their deals with the rights holder. So I'm not saying it'll never happen. It's just a bit trickier than certain other sports.
Huh. How about, do you partner with entertainment companies like broadcasters or Netflix or Amazon in order to create live events that would help build the fan base? Some like the first episode of Game of Thrones or something.
So we work closely with Fathom Events in the US. We distributed Pokemon with them last year. And I know they've had some real success with things like The Walking Dead. We're looking into that in the UK, and I think it's definitely something we will do in the future. It makes a lot of sense, and I think what it does is highlight the potential that cinema has to help market a certain type of content.
Well, exactly. I mean, what's interesting is if we think about people wanting to be engaged in a real experience, and if you have a fan base to exponentially increase that by giving them the opportunity to be with each other, to experience their thing with like-minded people. Everybody's trying to build fans. You know, it's no longer about viewers. It's about the fans, where the brand starts meaning something bigger than just a piece of content.
100%. And cinema is actually a brilliant venue for that. Funnily enough, we've had a lot of success working with media owners who were looking to do the same thing. So we worked on a David Bowie event last year, which was the original D.A. Pennebaker movie, the last ever Ziggy Stardust gig. And we worked with Mojo magazine. And what Mojo liked about the concept was that it gave them access to David Bowie fans and a great environment with a big screen to showcase their brand.
Mm-hmm.
But from our point of view, they added real authenticity to what we were doing. And they created a bespoke magazine cover to celebrate David Bowie.
Oh, fantastic.
Which was brilliant. So we got the benefit of that promotion, but also it helped justify a slightly higher ticket price and it gave fans something back. And we did an exclusive interview with Woody Woodmansey, who's the last surviving member of the band that was curated by Mojo and that was completely exclusive to the cinema audience. which was great. And I think because we worked so closely with them, we then combined, approached a brand, and we worked with Jaguar to sponsor the events. And from Jaguar's point of view, they got the benefit of a completely targeted audience in the cinema, which they don't tend to get with films, right? Films can be quite varied in terms of the audience, whereas event cinema content tends to be very, very targeted. But they also got the context through Mojo Magazine and, you know, the digital assets that came with it.
Well, and also you just get so much attention. You're not losing the attention to a second screen. They're right there and they're fully engaged. I mean,
exactly. And I think, you know, PR wise, you know, doing a big cinema event as well is very attractive to a brand. So, you know, I think in a roundabout way answering your question, I think, you know, we'll definitely work with other broadcasters, but we've already worked with some media partners and with some brands, you know, to the same effect. And we're realizing increasingly now that the power that cinema has to help start something rather than be the end point of something. You know, and I think that we're finding now we're being approached by more and more documentaries as a way to galvanize
a group. Like cause cinema then, that kind of thing, yeah?
Yeah,
people
100%. So we've just done a film and we're still doing it, Skid Row Marathon. Which is it's an amazing film about a high court judge who sets up a running club on Skid Row and in LA, and some of the inhabitants of Skid Row then run marathons and they run their way out of poverty, essentially. And it's such an uplifting film. And I think traditionally cinemas would look at it and say, well, it's a documentary, you know, we're not that interested. But we used the data tool. We found there were 10 million runners in the UK. There's 500 running clubs, all of whom are looking for engaging content about running. And it just changes the perspective. So we've done a big single night launch in cinema. We'll continue to doing other screenings, but that's just started the whole ball rolling for the producers of that film, which will hopefully end up with a sort of long tail where, you know, they go on Netflix, they've built up a big fan base, and you know, that cause and their message gets out to as many people as possible.
Right. With something like that, the economics of it, are you also bringing in brands like Nike or Adidas, or, you know, if you're dealing with running, or is it just purely the theater? I mean, how you had mentioned the brand with the Bowie project. Do you always partner in a brand as well as the theater, as well as the content, or is that just depending?
No. Our whole sort of our whole focus is on working with brands. So my business partner Simon, he was the CEO of Mindshare, one of the big media agencies. So that's his background. So we try and work with brands on every project. So on Skid Row, actually, we've worked with The Big Issue, which is a homeless magazine in the UK, and also Runner's World, and then a number of different brands, all of whom have helped us, you know, really get as much coverage as possible. We ended up on the BBC for 15 minutes, actually, which is...
Well done.
Almost unheard of. So, look, I mean, it's definitely not the perfect recipe, and there's definitely... We're still learning a lot as well, but I think we're getting more and more confident that the cinema can be... I think I've said it before, but I think viewing the cinema as the start point for a piece of content rather than the end point for it is actually a really interesting way of looking at event cinema. I think it opens up a lot of other opportunities.
Absolutely. Well, we have run through our time and that seems like the perfect end bite for it. But before we wrap up completely, where can people find out more about you and your companies?
Great. So you can go to www.cineplace.co.uk. cineplace.co.uk, and you can find out about us both through distribution and also our central platform there.
Do you work across all of Europe or just in the UK?
No, we work UK and Europe, and as I said before, we also work with Fathom Events, so we can cover America as well.
Excellent. Love to hear that. Well, thank you for joining me. It's been really fun chatting.
Likewise. Thank you.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media, and a big thank you to our guest, Joe. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.